demon full of culture.
Get it.
I got so much trouble on my mind. Refuse to lose.
Welcome to Emergency Medicine Remix, episode 222, PE, Public Enemy, Physician Education, Personal Education, Patient Education. We can go on and on, but you know the rules. You know why we're here, to approximate some form of health, to unify voices at the table, to open the conversation on what it means to be healthy. Remember, we don't have all the answers. No one does. Agreement is optional. Respect is mandatory. That being said and done, we are here now with the band, minus one new band member. Dr. Colbert said that he will catch us on the rebound. And at this time, we would love to just kind of talk about what it means to be public enemy number one on the landscape of health. First and foremost, this is Black History Month, so happy Black History Month to everyone. As we talk about Black History Month and we talk about health, we would be remiss in not bringing up the things that have separated us beyond just race, how that plays out in health inequities and disparities in the country. So guys, first and foremost, talk to me. Happy Black History Month. What's on your mind right now as we look at all of these things, educating one another, educating our fellow colleagues, educating our patients. And at the same time, if you're black, or brown, being public enemy number one, who's first up to bat?
Okay, so we're talking about our feelings.
Absolutely. Talk about your feelings. Talk about your feelings, black, brown, other.
I mean, I guess putting it in the context of medicine and putting it in the context of working in the hospital during Black History Month, I feel like this year, as opposed to other years, the hospitals have been trying to shine a more light on Black History Month. I know in my ER, we have like, Jackie Robinson, you know, different things all over the walls, like in between the patient rooms, which I think is really nice. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like this Black History Month is just zooming by as usual. And I think that it's fitting for us to talk about health disparities because that's what we see. And that's not just for a month. That's something that happens all year round. So yeah, I think the biggest thing about Black History Month is not the biggest thing, but one thing that I really hate is when the hospital cafeteria tries to make like soul food.
Okay, so your take is that's comedy. And let's talk about it. It's very profound.
It's
profound. It is that is deep. Let me tell you why.
Why does that have to happen during Black History Month?
You just pulled a Kendrick on us and you just hit us with this layered take. I'm going to flip it on you. A hot take. We're talking about food. Okay. It ain't no such thing as cold soul food. So a hot take. That is the stuff that we were talking about in our Race to Illness episode. Isn't that some of the stuff to create some of the disparity? Soul food?
Yeah. And it's weird because it's like, okay, is that celebrating Black History Month by trying to make macaroni and cheese that doesn't taste good and like trying to make fried chicken that doesn't taste good? Is that celebrating Black History Month? Is that really what I feel like we get these like little nuggets, like, here you go. You know, this is celebration. This is Black History Month. But it's really, I mean, if that's what a lot of hospital systems think celebrating Black History Month, that we have bigger problems here. Right.
And
we talked about the health part of it. Right.
Right.
Like all this stuff, like we know where soul food comes from and we know why it came about, right? And it wasn't because of health, it was because of survival. Right. So you're propagating this in our hospital cafeterias for what reason? We don't want it. Black people don't want, I don't.
And if we do, we've got to change something. It's like, yeah, keep taking that poison that's gonna keep you guys filling our hospital beds.
Right.
But wait a minute. We do want it. Okay.
I don't want that mask. Oh, y'all live in Atlanta. Atlanta.
Listen, I don't want it from the hospital, but I want it from grandma and my wife and mom.
I'm talking about the hospital. I do want to.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Okay, gotcha. I thought you were set tripping for a minute.
Oh,
yeah,
no! Yeah, yeah, yeah. Y'all know we like, talked about this food is like,
life. Well, disrespectful.
She thought of those vegan gang this. Signs and stuff. You know, like she was like no gluten. It was like NG, you know?
No, I don't want it from the hospital.
Okay, we on the same page now.
All right.
But you know,
the hospital is just doing the same thing that everybody does, you know, corporate America. It's everybody stupid. Just throws in the stereotypes to help the cliche Black History Month. It's like all these companies pick like, you know, the generic, you know, African cloth and put that as like their banner for Black History Month. And, you know, even, you know, the month itself, like, they pick the shortest month out of the year, Black History Month, you know, and Black History is American history, is world history, it's the whole year. So, exactly. I mean, this is the month to like put all the cliches up. And even like, I should have said earlier, like talking about Jackie Robinson, that it's always the same 3, 4, 5. And I love Jackie Robinson. Everybody knows I'm a baseball guy, you know, but it's always the same figures that we talk about, we learn about in schools, and nobody really wants to get into the real. And so we got to kind of break the cliche and actually get into, you know, the real Black history. But that's another conversation for another day.
But I mean, I think one of the hardest part too is I think for a lot of people, I can't understand what Black history is, or even like in my background and stuff. I think it's just is a weird kind of way of trying to connect with people. I think I don't know if people try to connect through food, but I mean, like, you know, I was talking to you guys before talking about like my experience between New York and Atlanta, where like, I mean, just recently during COVID, I wear a scrub cap and I had a patient tell me and I had like goggles, you know, E=MC². And I was told that, you know, she really liked my turban. But it's, and there's a white nurse who's wearing a scrub cap right next to me, you know. But I think it's just people's weird way of kind of relating to people. And I think it's gonna say, hey, like, it's Black History Month, let's have soul food, let's have all these kind of these cliche things, which is silly. Like, I agree it's silly, but I think it's just people just can't step into our shoes and kind of like and kind of see how we can relate to each other by just going through cliches and tropes and stuff, you know. So this is an unfortunate situation.
The issue that happens because they don't have actual Black people in the room to guide them on how to do some of these things, you know.
I mean,
boardrooms or whatever. Say, oh, let's do this with like little Black people in the boardroom.
I've always said too, like, I mean, you have hospitals where the diversity officers are not people of color, right? So, like, you have people they have very limited understanding of our experience and our history, and so they make these kind of cliches and tropes. Hey, they're going to connect with them, right? I mean, I don't know. Food is very important to me. You know, I know we've discussed this before, but I don't know if they're like, hey, get to somebody's heart, let's do food, you know? And so let's just do these cliches, these foods. And so I know, like, we had at the hospital I'm at right now, like, we had Diwali or something for, like, which is a Hindu festival, but they had, like, you know, Indian Pakistani sweets everywhere, right? So like, it's a way, I guess, maybe get into food or something like that. You just walk up into the front and there's just sweets everywhere,
like gulab jamun and those
gulab jamun, right. Like you know burfi, like those kind of like little sweets thing that people have. So
where those things, where type 2 diabetes runs rampant in certain South Asian communities, right?
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, I think I got diabetes after eating that whole tray of them, you know? So, right. You know, so it's like, it was just a lot. I mean, I just went crazy because I mean, I haven't seen... I swear to God, I did have some. I did eat a lot of those, unfortunately.
We're going to call back one of our previous episodes. We talked about it before.
Yeah.
We talked about the trap house. We talked about hospitals being the trap house. Right. So if you know that something has the same effects as drugs, cocaine, you know, heroin, whatever, and food can serve in that purpose. We're linking episodes now. We're building a bigger picture so people don't see the connectivity of our ongoing conversation. Here's the time. We're going to pull it together. And you are now dealing something out to a specific group of people that you know. It's a hospital. They know these foods are addictive. They know they're not good for you. So you are complicit in the undoing of this community. It is like Ricky Ross getting cracked from the CIA. That's a deep cut for those who don't understand what I just said. That's going back to set tripping. That's going back to the drug wars of the 1980s and 90s. So if you are supposedly an agent for health or agent for law and justice, ergo CIA, and you are complicit in undoing what your prime directive is, you are now guilty. You've got blood in your hands. Now, this is not to be high and mighty. I eat fried chicken every now and then, like the best of them, but I have to then expand that menu, that conversation, that diet to know that, hey, while this may have been my ancestors, I'm not shackled to this anymore. Double entendre. There is a deeper calling for me to learn from that history and to evolve beyond it. And these large power brokers can't say, well, this is what you guys like, so we gave it to you. That doesn't work anymore. So we're changing that conversation. That being said and done, I'm just going to, since we're bringing a lot of noise, we're going to talk about that.
Too black, too strong.
Yo, Chuck, these dirty dribbles are still front on us. Show them that we can do this, because we always do this.
How low can you go? Death row? What a brother, no. Once again, back is the incredible rhyme animal, the uncannibal thief. Public enemy number one. 5-4 said freeze. And I got numb.
All right, guys. You know, we could probably take that one 3, 4, 5 episodes by itself. But that being said and done, it introduces this this ongoing topic of disparity and inequities. Things that are inherently different, are disparities. When they become inequities is when the causes are preventable in the disparity. That's an inequity. So disparity is just a difference. You know, I like to use the example that older people have a higher death rate than younger people. That's a disparity. But if older people have a higher death rate than younger people because we're mistreating older people, or there's no way for them to get access to care, that becomes an inequity. And when we're talking about health amongst certain communities, and they're not monolithic communities, but let's talk about them, people who have brown skin in America, there is an inequity that results in the disparity in their health outcomes. Said again, heart disease. African Americans suffer from heart failure to a greater degree. There are certain communities where the survival rate of, you know, congestive heart failure in the African-American communities I'm speaking of is worse than cancer. These things are preventable, and they are something that we have to now bring to the forefront of the conversation. Just saying that you have brown skin, you have bad genes, it's no longer palatable, and that's no longer really true. So we're going to talk about these things. We're going to talk about these disparities a little further and how they play out. But let's talk about what is really comical to me. This is one of how we access care, structural barriers of getting to a doctor, getting to see your primary care physician. As I transition to this, I'm going to use another little Flavor Flav reference here that you guys may recognize. Here we go.
Hit me.
There's not a minute to spare.
Don't worry.
911's a joke.
There's not a minute to spare.
This was released 30 plus years ago.
Gone. Now I dialed 911 a long time ago. Don't you see how late they're reacting? They only come and they come when they wanna. So get the morgue truck and then bomb the corner. They don't care because they stay
paid. I don't get any of these references. I already told you I'm very, very young. So
let's school you.
I was saying we need Chris with a C on so you guys could talk about
Yeah, we do. We do. So let me tell you this. So let me school you guys. Yeah, because you guys were babies
flavor,
when this came.
Flavor play for us was
Flavor of Love.
Of love.
Exactly.
Sacrilege.
Flavor Flav. I think about Flavor of Love. I think about New York.
Blasphemy.
Tasty. All those girls.
Blasphemy. Sacrilege. Yeah. So no, this is actually good. That's actually good because, you know, I can hold it down without Chris. That's good because we need to see what comes before to predict what comes after, you know, past this prologue. And I love that you guys are the other half of that generation, because I'm going to be throwing up songs. They're like, who in the world is that? They're like, Flavor's in a group, Flavor rap? Like, yeah, Flavor's playing. Oh, my gosh. So, all right. So 911's a joke. Back in the early, I think it was like 90, 91, he released this song with Public Enemy called 911's a joke. And as you saw from the first line, he was saying, you know, they would basically come late whenever you called them to the hood. Doesn't that sound similar to what you're hearing about the pandemic currently? 911 being delayed in certain communities, people with 4 and 5 hour waits. That is not a new phenomenon. There's certain places where access to care is non-existent. And access, as far as transportation to care, is non-existent. So people will utilize 911 almost as a cheap and accessible way to get some type of medical care. You guys are saying, why did they come into the emergency department with all their kids with runny noses, you know, via EMS? that is a disparity. That is something that's just beyond people not being informed. That's people utilizing what's available to them to get what they need. Now, maybe I'm a lone guy in the wilderness. What is your take on that, guys? You guys have seen it. You're in the ED before. Don't act like you guys haven't seen that before.
I mean, it's definitely from a societal level. I mean, just in if you look at Black communities or just urban, more urban communities compared to suburban, there's just less and less public transportation, right? And I think that's what leads to a problem where people, where we say, hey, look, why did this person come in for a runny nose or a red eye? You know, that's something silly. But again, like people have, it's a means of survival, right? And so if you cannot be able to come to the hospital because of your own means of transportation, people will resort to EMS, right? Or calling 911 to get the ambulance to bring them over. I mean, there's a great, do you guys remember that show that Hasan Minhaj did on Netflix? I forgot what it was called. I think the Patriot Act.
Yeah.
Where he kind of talked about how you have big, like the Republican donors, like the Koch brothers are doing whatever they can to prevent public transportation from spreading in different communities. When it comes to Philly, I mean, like just look at Atlanta, the public transportation system is so limited. It's just a MARTA, which is a cross, right? So it doesn't really kind of go anywhere else. And it prevents people, and like nobody wants, like here in the suburban areas, like they do not want MARTA to spread through here. But it just restricts people from kind of having access to anything, to good proper food. I mean, one of the big disparities too, is just look at urban settings where there's just more McDonald's, there's more liquor stores, there's more bodegas there. So people don't have access to food. I've seen, you know, like nurses and doctors make fun of like Black patients coming in for chest pain and they're having McDonald's right next to them. They're eating McDonald's and they're criticizing them, but it's like, that's the only access to cheap food that they have, right? So it is going to perpetuate heart failure because there's so much salt there, right? It's going to perpetuate heart disease causing cholesterol problems. That's going to lead to heart attacks later on or strokes and stuff. It's just more of a problem that like these acts, like if you had easy access to medicine, either to transportation or to proper food, maybe some of this stuff wouldn't be, it's not a genetic thing, but just basically the societal level where we're not doing proper things or taking care of certain populations.
There's just to piggyback on that. Of course, like you mentioned the thought about like food deserts and just like not having access to care and not having access to transportation and how that just sets you up for failure. And I feel like we would be remiss if we didn't talk about like the seedlings that started all of this, right? Started all this disparity. And we would also be remiss if we didn't mention Rebecca Lee Crumpler, which is like the first Black doctor. And so I think in her time, what was happening, and I know this only because I recently taught a class on like health disparities and inequities. And basically they freed the slaves. This is how trifling all of this is, all right? So they freed the slaves, and then they opened up these freedmen hospitals, right? This was the first example of like a federally funded hospital where it was the government that was opening up these hospitals, right? So they open up these hospitals for Black people. And of course, you know, there's no funding, they don't have resources, they don't have any of this stuff. And the thought was, you know, we don't need to really give them any of this stuff because Black people are going to go extinct anyway out of slavery, right? So they set Black people up for failure. And then when Black people start dying because, you know, they don't have the resources, they don't have a functioning hospital system, they're like, yeah, see, they're ill-suited to be free. They're ill-suited to be, you know, with not be slaves. And that's how this whole thing started propagating. And I think that was like the seeds of what we're seeing now, where you set up a system where you're setting someone up for failure. Like you can't thrive if you don't have all the tools. And so we're talking about these food deserts. We're talking about not having access to care, not having access to transportation, blighted housing situations, all these things that kind of contribute to health. That was started as early as it possibly could for freed Black people. And so we're seeing the echoes of that now. And it's really hard to dissect it and figure out a resolution for it because this is like a century old thing. Like this is not a new thing. And so I think it's important for people to understand that we were set up from the beginning and it was on a federal level and it's still happening now, which is very, very unfortunate. Now, Rebecca Lee Crumpler is not the only Black female. We have thousands of Black female doctors, you know, but we're still in the same spot. So that's the big issue here.
Chris?
Yeah, there's just, I don't know, there's a lot of different directions to go there. But I think kind of piggybacking on the history that Chidi brought up, and relating it to the pandemic, part of the sad part, I think, is we know things like that happen and then continue to happen throughout, you know, American history, which obviously led to a lot of distrust in the African-American community when it comes to Western medicine and doctors. And that in turn has led to a lot of unnecessary deaths at the hands of COVID because people were not trusting the vaccine. People were not trusting what they were being told about the vaccine. And had there been some of that trust there in the Black community, a lot of people would still be here. So, you know, even today, if we're trying to do the right thing, it's still, you know, haunting us because of the past and current things that continue to happen. Also, talking about the health, I know we talked about through deserts in another episode, and Jawad just brought that up. A lot of it, too, is, you know, just the know-how and health literacy and actually having the information on how to actually practically do something. Like now, I think we talked about it a few episodes ago, how it's powerful that people are starting to talk about financial literacy. It's also powerful, as I have this sweatshirt on, but it's also powerful that Black people are starting to speak more about their health, right, and promote health. But even being, that's just the first step, like being conscious of being healthy is the first step. You actually have to know how to be healthy. And it's not just as easy as, oh, just exercise. We always say exercise and eat right. Okay, what does that mean? How do you eat right? And I like to give the analogy, like when in high school, middle school, high school, I breezed through high school. I didn't study one bit. Like I didn't take one bit of homework home. I just, granted it was Detroit Public Schools, but I just, shout out to Detroit, but I did my thing and got A's and it was all good. I got to college and it was a completely different ballgame. So it took a whole first semester for me to realize, oh, I guess I have to study. Yeah. And then the second semester, I was like, oh, I don't know how to study. Right. And so that's a whole process in general. So now it's all right, I want to be healthy. How do I become healthy? How do I incorporate healthier foods into my diet? How do I go about cooking these things? What are ways to make these things pleasant, but I actually want to eat them? And I think mm-hmm. that's kind of the next step of getting people to get healthy. We can't just, you know, throw out the cliche of let's be healthy, eat right, exercise. We have to actually get through the blueprint.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. And I think it was like a funny story from a patient where it's like, I was getting on them because I'd be getting on my patients. I'm like, why is your blood pressure looking like this? Like, I saw you last month. Why is your blood pressure still looking like this? And so they're like, sorry, doc, I know. And I said, what did we talk about last time? Because I'm always like, exercise, eat right, blah, blah, blah. So he's like, they were like, we have been eating right. Cause it was a husband and wife. We have been eating right. We've been eating salads. We've been eating it. I said, okay, well, talk to me about the ingredients in the salad. Cause I feel like people like the idea of eat right is like kind of skewed and, right. and it's relative to who you are. So like, we've been eating salads. I said, great. You know, tell me about the salad. So like, we put the iceberg, the lightest one we can find, the light lettuce. And then we also put bacon. We fry up a lot of bacon. We put that in there too. What else were we putting in there? Oh yeah.
Two cups of ranch.
Yeah, that's what I said, yeah.
Yeah, ham hocks. And what else are you putting in there? Oh yeah, we put three types of cheese in there. We put shredded cheddar cheese. Going on, croutons.
That sounds good. I
was crackish like, ways of calling you, Chris. Some crackish ways you start scratching.
I mean, my mouth was watering. Still, I couldn't let them know that. So I said, no, you know, they're missing the point. So I think the next step, like Chris was saying, is like, okay, how do you eat healthy? You know, it's not enough to say you eat healthy. And I think a different physician might be like, great, salads, check, move on, you know, instead of like digging in there and say, what exactly are you putting in this salad? And finding out that they're putting all the unhealthy foods that they were eating into the salad. And then also using like the lettuce that has like the least nutritional value, you know what I mean? So it's just like, they don't know. It's in this, there's ignorance there that we need to tackle.
I think that's one of my favorite topics to talk about too. Cause I mean, I think I showed you guys the picture of me in 2008, like where I was pretty like 205 pounds. So I actually show patients that picture. I always show patients that picture. And I'm like, hey, like the way I lost all that weight was for every 9 good meals, I ate a 10th meal that was bad. Right. So it's like, don't completely get rid of all the bad stuff. Cause I think that's the hard part. Like I'm a sweet tooth and there's gonna be so hard certain foods to get out of your thing. But hey, for every 9 nice foods I'm talking about, grilled chicken, lettuce. There's no fried food. There's no like things like that kind of talk. And I think just taking the time to talk to people as well. I think one of the hardest part of emergency medicine is just the time, right? Like I think we're very quick because we're all about like an assembly line. We're trying to see the next patient, talk to the next patient, try to get back, write our notes, to take care of like get people admitted or send them home and stuff. But I think just sitting down, having a conversation with the patient, I think it's hard. But I think you're right, Shitty. I always have this conversation where people talk about, hey, I'm eating right. But then they talk about all the crazy stuff they're putting in their salad. You know, it just doesn't become a salad at the end of the day, you know? So, but I think it's...
and this is good. So I'm going to transition us through music again. We are frontline workers before the pandemic. We are often the first doctors that a lot of people see or have seen in a long time. So we are really positioned to start this conversation in the emergency department. And patients, hold your emergency physicians accountable. We're not dietitians or nutritionists, but we have a baseline knowledge and we have a resource that we can direct you in some of those places you need to be to actually begin that journey of health. This is a partnership. I think just recently it was West Journal of Emergency Medicine just released that they're going to stop using the word provider when talking about physicians because it kind of lumps us all in and doesn't give us the credit for our qualifications. I said this in an early episode, we should stop using the word patients and use the word partners because this is a partnership. Health does not happen in a vacuum. So we may be on the front line, but there's a war going on outside, a quote, you know, prodigy from Mobb Deep. People need to be able to leave our emergency department. Huh? What'd you say, man?
No one is safe from.
No one is safe from. Shook. Yeah.
We know that one. We know that reference.
Yeah, you know, that's all right. That's okay. Before there was a Mobb Deep, there was a Public Enemy. So, you know, this was hardcore rap in the days. And this is from Strong Island. So this is a shout out to actually Chitty as well as Jawad, you know, your hometown heroes. So the idea that we are sometimes the frontline to protect people's journey of health. They say, look, hospitals are reset at best. You don't get healthy in a hospital. You may be reset to go on and start that journey over again. So I'm going to play this little thing right here, Security of the First World. This is for us to realize our role in this whole conversation, journey of health. All right, guys. So look, we're going to just kind of transition a little bit here because this idea of us being on the front line and disparities and us kind of being advocates and educators for health, not only for our patients, but ourselves. Remember, this is called PE. So this is actually patient education, physician education, and personal education. And that is part of that journey of health. We who are on the front line have to educate ourselves what it means to be healthy and what it means to actually help people reach or start their journey of health. And in doing so, we got to be aware of what they're facing outside. So we're going to talk about some of the accomplishments that people have done along the way to do that. And I'd just like to focus a little flavor here. Once again, flavor's going to get a lot of love on this episode as we talk about some of the innovations to approximate that journey of health. You're
blind, baby. You're everybody blind copy Flav. Oh,
you are, because you're watching yes. that garbage. Watching that garbage. So we're going to talk about someone who was phenomenal in that. It is Dr. Patricia Bath. This is for Black History Month. We're going to give her love and her shout out. I believe she is still making an impact on the landscape of health. She actually invented a laser therapy for cataract removal. This is in the early 2014-ish era. She came out with a technology that helped eliminate cataracts through lasers, very minimally invasive surgery. And she was a sister. This is a woman who is Black and brown, like the people at this table and the people that this message first and foremost goes out to. She realized her power way, 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 way before she became a physician. And she was a bit of a Renaissance person in that understanding what it means to gain education in that journey of health. So we're going to give you a link at the end of this to look at what it took for her to approximate health through education, through science, through math. And as a person who faced a lot of the inequities and battles that we talk about here today. So shout out to Dr. Patricia Bath. That being said and done, she's one of many that has tried to overcome the odds and this fear of a blank planet. Shout out to PE once again. But it has required an army of people like the people you see here today. And these are some of the individuals. We're going to transition with this one song here. Brothers and sisters are going to work it out. So despite all of these beautiful accomplishments by physicians, we can run down the list of them from Percy Julian to Charles Drew. We're going to put some links there for you to look them up for this Black History Month. We will be remiss, once again, using that word, to not mention that this year we are looking at health disparities at the aftermath of a pandemic. And at the same time, we've seen Black and brown doctors rise up in the trenches to actually save their fellow man. This is not the first time this has occurred. Many, many, many years ago in the streets of Chicago, there was a physician by the name of Dr. Daniel Hale Williams, who actually was one of the first pioneers of open heart surgery. Basically, he resuscitated a man who was stabbed in the heart, actually going down the record book as one of the first open heart surgeries in the world, and actually saved this man's life. Now, this was a phenomenal accomplishment for the time. This was something that at the time, Negro physicians were not supposed to be able to do and perform. And he proved that once again, race does not determine our ability. It doesn't determine our potential or the goodness that comes from our hands and minds. However, while we celebrate the story of Daniel Hale Williams, we once again want to parallel it with the sad story of Bruce Tucker. Bruce Tucker was a gentleman who actually was involved and one of the first open heart transplants in the South, Virginia. The story goes that basically there was a gentleman who had injured himself critically at a work party and was identified, this Black man, and believed to be just a drunk. Well, this one said hospital, who will not go named here, but you will give you the resources where you can find it, decided that he was a prime candidate to be a heart donor without his permission, without consent. And they harvested his heart in order to perform this surgery and replace the dying heart of a white successful businessman in the community. This remained a story of triumph and science accomplished, scientific accomplishment, until the whole story came out. Once again, Black history is sometimes good, sometimes it's bad, but it's history nonetheless. And it was determined that this man had a family, this man had not consented, that he was not a local drunk, and that the body part from this Black man who was unable to actually advocate for himself was used to save this man of privilege. And that is part of the sad history of heart disease and the treatment and the advancements thereof in America. So we're going to focus those two things together in Black History Month as we proceed to talk a little bit more. Guys, we're going to wind this down a little bit in that kind of parallelism. What do you think about this? This how we advance science on Black and brown bodies. And it definitely is an advancement, but at a very, very unequal and high cost. Let me get your hot takes.
It's a hard truth. It's a hard truth to swallow. I mean, so many advancements in science have come unethically, to put it very lightly. You know, and on the one hand, you look and it's like, man, this is a great medical or technological advance. On the other hand, we know that many Black bodies were experimented on without consent, without knowledge. And so it's tough. It's tough pill to swallow. And the tougher thing is that medicine is pretty much just kind of tried to sweep it under the rug up until this point. There's never truly been a big acknowledgement of kind of what's happened throughout the years. It's kind of, and that's kind of helped to lead to a lot of the distrust because there's not been those open lines of communication. You know, there may have been a couple of random, you know, presidential apologies, but, you know, that's not the same thing as true acknowledgement from the medical community and true apologies and trying to actually make things right. And then we wonder why we can't get Black people to participate in scientific research. And then again, once again, which is a health disparity or inequity. And then once again, we go and place the blame on those populations. And so, you know, we've got to figure out a way to bridge that gap for sure.
Well said.
I agree with that. I think when I think about it, it's a form of slavery, right? You're a commodity at the end of the day. So
preach.
You know, the traditional slavery, the commodity was the body and the work. And now, you know, with medical slavery, it's like your body's still the commodity and what you're going to get out of it is, you know, advancements in research. But what does that do to the actual product or the commodity itself? It deteriorates it, right? And so usually these people who are advancing medical, you know, medical, whatever, technologies is coming at a price. Their own health, right? So we're looking to see how other people can do better, and that's going to be the general public. Generally, that's white people, and it's at the expense of Black people who did not give their consent. And I think that it's a form of slavery. That would be my take on that.
Powerful, yeah, yeah. Jawad, last words.
I mean, I don't know. I think you guys have like said a lot of important things. I mean, I feel like I would just be piggy. Oh, like sorry. We can edit this part because something just popped up on my screen. Sorry.
Yeah, you're good. We're good.
I mean, I'm just going to kind of, I mean, all I kind of say is to kind of piggyback on what you guys said. I mean, I think what Chidi said is kind of insightful. I mean, I don't think I thought of it that way, you know, in terms of looking at medical slavery. But I think it's gotten to the point where I think using us as a resource, I think kind of, again, we were talking about the pandemic episode before, to kind of just using or picking our battles and kind of just doing one patient at a time or one partner at a time, you know, and having them kind of, I was going to tell patients that, hey, like, you know what, I'm putting one foot forward for you. You got to put one foot towards me. And I think kind of just coming with this teamwork to kind of try and make little wins, you know, and see if we can try and make a bigger difference that way.
What you're talking about is called advocacy, right? Yeah. Advocating for one another. So guys, this is very mature. Not that our stuff was other immature before, but yeah. it's a heavy task, right? These are really heavy subjects, and to talk about history and only in good senses about how great we are is an incomplete history. It robs us of the ability to evolve and to learn. And I appreciate the insight you guys gave in this. It's going to make me think about it. You know, what happens to the individual, you know, that is commoditized, you know, for scientific gains, and how we as physicians, scientists have a reckoning that we have to really face what has been done and what we've achieved unfairly at the loss of others. So thank you. Thank you, everyone. As always, we don't have all the answers. Feel free to leave voicemails for us. We're now taking links and voicemail messages. And if you want to be on the show, you can find it at emremixpodcast.com. You'll see a mic there. You can leave open comments as well as sign up to be a guest on the show. Stay healthy. All right, thanks, guys. Good job.
Flavor Flav.
That was good. That was good. You guys, that was very, it was, I didn't think it was going to be as heavy as it is, but that's pretty heavy stuff, man.
I had more things to say, but.
The conversation's open, sis. You know we're going to come back.
Yeah.
I wanted to piggyback onto what Jawad was saying about like taking the time and talking to patients. I'm like, we're talking about big business here, right? Mm-hmm. That's not incentivized. What's incentivized mm-hmm. for us is get in and get them out,
right.
Get them admitted, get them discharged. Don't spend time. That's what's incentivized. And the doctors that do that are the ones that get praised, right? So when you do the opposite and you're taking your time, there's a lot of doctors that I work with that I'm like, people are like, oh, that person is not fast, you know?
Right. And they're scrutinized and actually looked down upon, right?
Yeah. They're in there talking to patients, like educating patients, not doing unnecessary testing because they actually spoke to the patient. So, you know, that person is looked at and scrutinized and looked at negatively by the colleagues, by the nurses, because they're not fast, you know, when in actuality, I feel like there, and I've been talking about this with a couple of other physicians, like there needs to be a way to incentivize that as well. If there's not going to be a way to incentivize, like, no, we can talk about this all day, right?
I think that, yeah.
Hey guys, I'm going to have to run. I got an ASAP meeting. I got a chair But look, we got to catch up. I'm going to send out some dates because I want to keep this going. I think we got a nice little momentum going now.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So I'll send some dates out after the meeting. You guys feel free to send me and I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. See you.
All right. Take care.
Hey guys.